This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. There's a story that's been passed down about a poor man who found a very rare diamond. He refused to sell it to a government minister who wanted to beautify an idol. Rather than engage in idolatry, the man threw the diamond into the sea. That night, an angel appeared to him and said that he would have a son who would light up Israel like a diamond. That son was the Rabbi of Worms. In the Middle Ages, when interfaith relations were particularly strained, both Christians and Jews came from all over Europe seeking his guidance. Marie Hammond wrote the historical novel The Rabbi of Worms. She's going to be reading this Sunday at the Levin Jewish Community Center in Durham. But first, she joins us to talk about The Rabbi of Worms. Marie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Set the scene for us, the historical context for your novel.
Well, broadly speaking, it is, of course, historical fiction. It deals with relations between Christians and Jews in the Middle Ages. It is the time leading up to the First Crusade. And if you know anything about the Crusades, they at times became rather uncontrollable. The armies... I put that in quotes. The armies that were supposed to be going to the Middle East, in fact, became rather violent right in Europe and caused some real devastation in the Jewish communities.
Right. This was a real outburst of anti-Semitic violence by Christians on their way to or from, or some never got off, to fight Muslims in the
Middle
East.
Exactly. But the story begins much before that, and so... I'm working with individuals who developed relationships, good relationships, and that often happened between Christians and Jews, and then how they dealt with the difficulties that followed.
And tell us about this teacher, the Rabbi of Worms.
Well, first let me correct your pronunciation, if I may. The city is called Worms on the Rhine River.
But it's so much, you know, saying the Rabbi of Worms is just the greatest sounding thing in the world.
Okay.
But I take your point, and yes. It's a German pronunciation.
It is,
yes.
Indeed. And, I'm sorry, what was your question?
So we want to know about the rabbi.
The rabbi. He lived in the 11th century. He was a scholar and a teacher, excellent teacher. He wrote commentaries on the Bible, and also on the Talmud. And the commentaries actually are so excellent, so well-regarded, that they are still used today, almost 1,000 years later. I could tell you how I first learned about the rabbi and what stimulated my interest.
Yeah, please do.
With my family, I was visiting relatives in Worms back in the 1990s, and my cousin took us on a tour of the reconstructed Jewish quarter of the city. The old synagogue had been burned down by the Nazis, and much of that section of the city had been bombed. But they had done a very nice job of reconstructing the mm-hmm. Jewish quarter, and the synagogue was rebuilt according to the original plan. And attached to the synagogue is a space called the Rashi Chapel. And behind the synagogue is a building called the Rashi Museum. Well, I had never heard of Rashi before. But my cousin explained to me that he was a rabbi of the Middle Ages who was so beloved, so well-regarded, so renowned for his wisdom that people came from all over Europe to seek his counsel and guidance on religious and social and legal questions. And not only Jews came, but Christians too. And this really stimulated my interest, and eventually I got around to... I was working on something else, but eventually I started reading about him and became more and more interested.
So he has this reputation, again, among Christians and Jews, in the contemporary Christians and Jews. Your book begins a little bit after his time, and again, when this anti-Semitic violence is beginning to heat.
No, actually, the book begins while he is still a young man, before the violence occurs. And the violence comes later in the story, in the second half of the book.
And tell us about his relation then to the other characters who you've created. He's the historical figure. We know there is a Rashi. And then your figures.
He is the inspiration, both for my writing the book, but also for the characters in the story. He lives now in a city in France called Troyes, but he comes back to Worms. He had lived there as a young man. He had studied there and taught there in their yeshiva, which is the German word for yeshiva, the Jewish school. And he comes back periodically to teach, to visit his friends for various reasons. And so the children in the story, the story begins when the three main characters are children. And they are very, they study together. And at every opportunity, when the rabbi comes to town, they go hear him speak, whether he's teaching or giving a lecture or a sermon. And so that's in the first half of the book. And then later, when the Crusades begin, the story moves a little bit. It actually goes over to France. And his rulings are very important in helping people to deal with the catastrophe that has overcome the Jewish population along the Rhine.
And, of course, you have your young protagonists who have now grown are Christians and Jews, and their
yes.
relationship is the important part. Tell us more about that and their relationship and the impact of these teachings, and again, in this context of violence.
Well, the relationship is one of great friendship and sympathy, and more than that, the little Jewish boy who becomes friends with the Christian boy actually teaches him to read. Most Christian children did not go to school. It was only the priests and maybe some of the nobility or wealthy merchants who could afford to hire tutors for their sons. But most of the children, it was not deemed necessary for them to learn to read or anything else. On the other hand, the Jews had schools for their children in almost every town, and most of the Jewish boys, now we have to distinguish here, the girls were not educated, but most of the boys did go to school from the age of six and learned to read. And this was, Joseph, I should say, the Christian boy, was bullied rather badly. And this became an outlet for him, just something he could devote himself to, learning. And when his friend, the Jewish boy, taught him how to read, it opened a whole new world for him.
So you're introducing this theme of resilience in the face of violence, which is a response to the catastrophe that the Jews then earlier and later would all experience.
Yes, exactly. It happens on a small scale, first with the boys and the bullies, and then it happens on a large scale.
Will you read for us?
I would be glad to. This first scene, remember Joseph is 6 years old at the beginning of the story, and as I mentioned, he's bullied by a gang of boys. In this scene, one of the boys has grabbed him by the wrist. From the back side of the alley came the sound of footsteps. Whoever it was walked up close to them and might have passed by without stopping, except that Joseph gave out a short, involuntary sob. "What's going on here?" asked the one who had just arrived. "Get lost," said the red-haired boy. "Let me hear from the other boy first." Joseph was too frightened to speak, but he sobbed again. "Okay, let go of him, and if you won't tell me what's going on, then you just get out of here." The new boy turned to Joseph. "What's your name?" "I'm Joseph." "Well, I'm Moshe. Come on, I'll walk you home." "Where do you live?" Joseph asked as the two boys emerged from the alley. "Over there in the Jewish quarter." "Does that mean you're a Jew?"
"Yes, I'm a Jew."
"What's a Jew?" Moshe laughed. "Well, my mother and father are Jews and my sister. We read Torah and keep the laws and worship the Holy One."
"You can read?" asked Joseph in astonishment.
"Yes, I started school when I was 6 years old. All the boys do, and some of the girls learn to read at home." Joseph hesitated.
Could you teach me to read?"
"Well, my father says it's the duty of every scholar to teach others, so I guess if you want to learn to read, I'll have to teach you. But you need to know Hebrew first."
"Okay."
Joseph was becoming excited. "Could we meet every day?"
"Well, let's try it once or twice and see how it goes."
Marie Hammond reading from her historical novel, The Rabbi of Worms. Worms? You know, we don't do that for Paris. You noticed that, right?
Yes.
That we don't say Paris. We do say Paris. Anyway, it's a wonderful book, historical novel. Going to be giving a reading Sunday, February 9th at 2 o'clock at the Levin Center a community center in Durham. You did a lot of tell us about the research that you did for this book.
Yes. Well, first, I began by reading, I think, three biographies of Rashi, all found in the Duke Library, which is a wonderful resource we have close to home. And then I began reading general background information about Jews in medieval Europe and just about that time period in general.
You also have several chronicles written by survivors of that first crusade, right? You read those?
Yes, indeed. In fact, I tried to work into the book as much actual historical material as I could. And there were three main sources. One of them was the chronicles that were written by some of the survivors or their descendants who lived through that awful time.
Where were they, if you forgive me for interrupting, yeah. Mm-hmm. Where were they archived? Where were they kept?
I'm not sure. There are now good translations in English. Again, I got them from the Duke Library, but I presume they were just kept by the families for many centuries.
And other documents as well.
Other documents I used were historical proclamations issued by kings and bishops regarding the rights and privileges of the Jews, but also the restrictions placed upon them. And then, of course, I used Rashi's commentaries and his judgments that were made, questions that people asked him.
Was Rashi talking directly about, because anti-Semitism was abroad, even if the violence hadn't escalated to that point yet, you talked about restrictions on the Jews. Did he address these things directly?
He did. And some of that is in the book. So
tell us about that, because again, it seems on the one hand, as a teacher, you have a kind of lofty teaching about sacred scripture, but on the other hand, you're really being asked to, as an expert and scholar, to comment, help us understand what's going on here. Right?
Well, first of all, anti-Semitism was not as virulent or violent before the First Crusade as it became afterward. That was, in a way, a turning point in history. There were fairly good relations between the Christian community and the Jewish community for centuries.
But there were restrictions.
There were restrictions. Certainly, the Jews were not citizens. They couldn't vote in those cases where there was voting. They couldn't serve in the army, which you might regard as an advantage. they perhaps had to pay extra taxes or they certainly couldn't serve as public officials.
How were they written up? I know that you also used proclamations by kings and bishops regarding some of these restrictions. That would mm-hmm. be an insight into the thinking behind the sort of Christian preference.
Yes. Well, many of the political leaders realized that Jews were actually a benefit to have in their communities because they brought economic activity. Many of the Jews were traders because they were restricted from other professions. They became merchants and they also had the advantage, two advantages as merchants. Number one, they had a language that, namely Hebrew, that many, many people, many Jews all over Europe could understand, a common language.
Yeah, well, certainly that would make trading a lot easier.
It would make trading a lot
easier. You can cross borders.
Yeah. And they had a reputation for honesty. That when they traded, they told you what something was worth, and generally that was the case.
Could you tell from your research what it was that spawned this tipping point, as you say, this escalation? Was it just men under arms with not enough to do, or was it more than that?
Well, that's a fairly good description. Mm-hmm. when the Crusades began. Originally, of course, the intent was to take back the Holy Land from the infidels, namely the Muslims, who controlled the Middle East, the Turks, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. And when the Pope issued this decree, this call to arms, he perhaps was not specific enough. He said that anyone who's willing to go will have his sins forgiven. So many people who were simply unemployed or were robbers or, you know, criminals of some sort, even women and children, just suddenly packed up and left and on foot, these huge mobs of people, uncontrolled, uncontrollable.
What were some of the surprises for you or sort of the big moments in terms of what you learned about this period in researching this book?
Well, mainly who Rashi was. I had really never heard of him until I visited Worms that time. And what wonderful insight he had into what was going on around him, and his incredible wisdom in dealing with the violence, in consoling and counseling his people. Toward the end of the book, he is actually talking about what's happened. And one question that came up after this first crusade, after the violence, was, what about the Jews who converted to Christianity under pressure? You know, they were threatened with death. Do we accept these Jews back into our community? And this was a question that actually was put to the scholars and put to Rashi, and he answered it in such a wonderful way, in a very kind and compassionate way.
And what did he say?
Well, I don't want to give it away.
All right, you'll have to buy the book.
Yeah, you'll have to buy the book.
But it was a good answer.
There were several different cases, and he dealt with each case individually. I will say that.
Marie Hammond wrote the historical novel The Rabbi of Worms. She will be speaking this Sunday, February 9th at 2 o'clock at the Levin Jewish Community Center. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
And thank you for listening to our program. There's more. If you missed that, you can always find that date on our website, stateofthings.org. That and much, much more. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Nicole Campbell, Megan Mataferi. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is the news director. And this is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And I'm Frank Stachow.